This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Tuesday, April 9th, 2013. According to a study by the Fort Collins Coloradan, the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission has issued more than 3,800 violation notices since 1996, but only about 270 of them have resulted in fines. 3,800 violation notices, 270 fines. Of the fines the state has levied in the past 17 years, 112 have been for $2,000 or less. The average oil and gas fine is about $22,000 since 1996. Only 12 fines have been $100,000 or higher, nearly all of which were levied for violations in the Piance Basin of Rio Blanco and Garfield counties. The highest were related to serious groundwater contamination. Three of the fines were levied for violations in far eastern Colorado. Colorado lawmakers are trying to increase the maximum fine from $1,000 to $15,000 per day. They also want to impose a minimum $5,000 fine for a serious oil and gas violation that has a significant impact on public health and the environment. Lobbyists for the industry say oil and gas regulations must work to both protect the environment and the business climate by encouraging best practices without being punitive. Colorado Oil and Gas Association spokesman Doug Flanders said the industry supports more than 100,000 Colorado workers. Meanwhile, the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent reports that some residents of Parachute, concerned about high levels of benzene 10 feet from the banks of Parachute Creek, are calling on state officials to take over the water sampling duties currently being conducted by a private company. That company, Bargath LLC of Oklahoma, is listed as a subsidiary of Williams Companies Incorporated, the parent company of Williams Midstream and WPX Energy, both involved in the current spill. Bargath, according to statements from the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, has been in charge of water sampling from Parachute Creek and from two groups of water quality monitoring wells, one group at about 30 feet from the creek and a second group just 10 feet from the creek. In an email to the director of the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, Silt resident Carl McWilliams pointed out that Bargath, in late 2012, was fined $275,000 for violations of the state's stormwater management regulations in Garfield County. Bargath was working on a pipeline project with Williams Production RMT, another corporate offshoot of the Williams companies, along a different stretch of Parachute Creek. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission has conducted some tests of water on the surface of Parachute Creek, but it has left to Williams Midstream and Bargath the work of digging groundwater monitoring wells in the area between the plume of hydrocarbons and Parachute Creek, as well as sampling in Parachute Creek. Test results from two of those wells have shown levels of benzene in the water thousands of times higher than the state or federal safety standards, although company and state officials say the creek itself has not been contaminated by the plume. Benzene is a known carcinogen linked to leukemia and birth defects, and national poison control guidelines call for anyone facing benzene exposure to wear protective gear to avoid contamination. Todd Hartman of the Department of Natural Resources says Williams is doing additional work on the north side of Parachute Creek to keep groundwater from entering the creek. These operations include a series of trenches designed to lower the groundwater level and remove liquid hydrocarbons and contaminated groundwater from near the stream's edge. Hartman says the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is also discussing details of the site with the leadership of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. On March 20th, Williams Midstream and WPX Energy were both issued a formal notice of alleged violation by the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission concerning the plume of hydrocarbons next to Parachute Creek. The plume was found by Williams workers on March 8th in a 40-foot right-of-way owned by Williams, which crosses land belonging to WPX Energy. The Denver Post reports that the state's current model for marijuana businesses was reversed on Monday as legislators endorsed a proposal that would allow recreational pot stores and commercial growers to operate independently. Currently, medical marijuana businesses in Colorado are vertically integrated, meaning growers and sellers are part of the same company and the stores grow most of what they sell. But on Monday, at the final meeting of the legislative committee writing a bill for recreational marijuana rules, lawmakers backed a model where growers and sellers would be separate. They also shrunk what had been a one-year window where only medical marijuana businesses could apply for a recreational pot shop license down to 3 months. The result is potentially a radical change to the economics of the cannabis industry in Colorado. And it didn't come without criticism, including from lawmakers on the committee who felt they were given little notice of the proposal to study it carefully. Representative Dan Pabon, a Denver Democrat who chaired the Special Marijuana Committee and proposed the change, said the general issue had been thoroughly debated. The change was supported by many small medical marijuana business owners who say that decoupling the two sides of the industry allows people to focus on what they're best at. The change could benefit also big money interests currently not involved in the medical marijuana industry who, under the old proposal, would have been on the sidelines of the recreational marijuana boom for a year. A number of large medical marijuana dispensary owners argued to keep vertical integration because, they say, it allows the state to keep tighter control on the marijuana being produced. Mike Elliott, the executive director of the Medical Marijuana Industry Group, said the state must show it can keep pot from leaking out of the commercial system if it wants to keep the federal government from intervening. Said Elliott, "What we've shown is this current regulatory framework has worked, and switching it is dangerous." The legislature has until the end of its session, May 8th, to pass all of its new policies on marijuana, which voters in November legalized in small amounts for people 21 and older, with an amendment to the Colorado Constitution. The Aspen Times reports the snowpack at just 70% of average east of Denver, but 130% of the level 1 year ago. This according to the Natural Resources Conservation Service. In the Frying Pan River Valley east of Basalt, the snowpack is 98% of average and 133% of last year's level. However, at lower elevations of the valley, the snowpack is bleak, from 39 to 69% of average. In the Crystal River Valley, south of Carbondale, the snowpack at Schofield Pass is just 70% of average, but still 119% of last year. It's even more pronounced at McClure Pass, with the snowpack at 74% of average, but 179% of last year, the agency reported. Last year, March warmed up like a blast furnace and no spring moisture fell. More gradual warming allows water from melting snow to soak into the ground first and then replenish the rivers and streams. It is also critical for hayfields to receive rain at the end of April and beginning of May. Ranchers in the Roaring Fork Valley reported getting only 2/3 of their normal hay yield last summer because conditions were so dry. A bill to compensate Coloradans who are wrongfully imprisoned initially cleared the House on Monday with widespread bipartisan support. As Benta Brooklyn reports, the measure was brought forward because of one particular case.
Robert Dewey served 16 years behind bars for the rape and murder of a Palisade woman. But in 2012, new DNA evidence proved his innocence, and he became a free man.
This is a modest proposal one that will do its best to attempt to make whole those who have been subjected to the worst possible trauma and our worst nightmare.
That's Democratic Representative Dan Pabon of Denver, one of the main sponsors of House Bill 1230. It would pay someone wrongfully convicted $70,000 for each year spent behind bars. An innocent convict would get another $25,000 for each year on parole and extra money for awaiting an execution. It would also provide health care, child support payments, and free in-state college tuition. Republican Representative Jared Wright of Fruita says it's not what he would have written.
Do I believe $70,000 a year is appropriate? I don't know if this is appropriate. In fact, I asked Mr. Dewey in committee, is this number appropriate for you? And he said, well, you can't really put a price tag on all my years of freedom that were taken away.
But Wright says he still supports the bill because it is the right thing to do. Nearly half of the country already has similar laws on the books. Supporters say they don't know how many people it could apply to in the future. It still needs a final House vote before it can head to the Senate. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
And finally, here's a look at road conditions around the mountains this morning. I-70 is dry from the Utah border to Glenwood Springs and wet through Glenwood Canyon. Snow begins to impact travel around Eagle, and you can expect snow and snow-packed road all the way into Denver. U.S. 50 from Montrose to Gunnison is experiencing scattered showers with some snow and icy spots. This continues to and over Monarch Pass. 550 is also snowing with icy spots, and you can expect travel will be heavily impacted by snow throughout the day in the San Juan Mountains. Thus concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.